your vote in the upcoming Republican primary. I'm running as a principled conservative. In the past year, I've witnessed convenient conservatives make decisions in your government based on news cycles. This conservatism by convenience has created policies that exacerbate the perennial challenges we face. As a principled conservative, I will make decisions on your behalf that honors your freedom more than the convenience of a positive news cycle. You can have confidence I'll do this because I have a voting record that proves it. Vote Travis Dunlap on June 26th.
Paid for and authorized by Travis Dunlap, Campaign 2018.
And a community connection this morning brought to you by Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. And having just heard from the candidate, we'll hear from the candidate, Travis Dunlap. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. Thank you for having me. What a wonderful day it is.
It's a great day in the neighborhood and sunshine for the next couple of days at least. Not that we don't need the rainfall, but everybody seems to like sunshine.
Well, one of my favorite things about summer is I get to run in the morning. It's not cold, so I can take a run in the morning, and I usually jog around Sooner Park when I do that, and it's a wonderful time to take in the weather, clear my thoughts for the day, and of course get a little bit of a workout and heart pumping as well.
Sooner Park in your district?
Yes, it is. Sooner Park is in my district, just across from where I live.
So that's a great thing, too. We are at least touching on the fact that you are running for re-election.
Of course. I wanted to spend a little bit of time introducing myself to your listeners. I have such an honor of being here, and your listeners might be familiar with the radio show we have on Friday, but this will be a little bit different than that.
Well, let's see. We a few years ago, I don't remember when it was, but the family was honored a few years ago as a legacy family, I believe.
No, we weren't. But
You should.
But I will talk about my family legacy though, because one of the things that I really love telling people about my involvement in politics is the fact that it has gone so far back in my family. Now, as we are just discussing off air, I'm of the artistic bent. I am a musician, and by training and by passion. And so a lot of people wonder, what is a musician doing in politics? Well,
not the first time.
You're right. It's not the first time. But my family's involvement in politics actually goes back to my great-grandmother. Now, not my great-grandfather, but my great-grandmother. And maybe some of the more seasoned listeners out there remember Lucille Dunlap. And Lucille Dunlap is somebody I never met, but I felt like I knew her growing up, because growing up I would hear stories about the kindness that she showed to people and how out of the way that she went to make people feel comfortable and to really serve them. Well, her involvement in politics was as a volunteer in the Republican Party here in Washington County. And so what I like to tell people is that she was a Republican before it was cool to be a Republican. And I think that speaks well of her and how committed she was to the principles that the Republican Party stands for. Because of that, she hosted precinct meetings at her house. And during the 50s and early 60s, precinct polling actually took place at her house. Mm-hmm. And that's always a fun story to tell, because I can just imagine the house is still standing. It's over there across from Greater First Baptist Church, and there's a wraparound porch on the house. And so I always imagine people coming up and waiting around on the porch and having conversations and really doing the business of politics at the time. At the time, you chose the party's candidate in those meetings. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved telling that story, because when subsequent family members of mine got involved into politics, it was her involvement in the party that made our family presence in the business legitimized. And so I am proud to carry on that tradition, and it's something I grew up around, never expecting I would be in a public office like I am now, but understanding its importance. If we don't have people to guard the freedom that we've been given by our Creator, then we have people who are going to get in there and try to control our lives. Mm-hmm. And so we need to have people who understand those principles. But I thought that beyond that, I could basically just talk about some of those things that I think are really important, what I would want out of my representative in government, and consequently what I, when I'm talking with people at their doorstep, what I feel like is important to go over and people understand about me as I seek to gain their vote and the honor to represent them in state government. So,
sounds like a good idea.
All right. Well, let me first start off by talking about life. And the one reason I want to start off talking about this is that this is obviously a very fundamental principle. It's the very first thing our founders recognized as an inalienable right given to us by our Creator. And it is at the level, it's I guess, the way I want to say is that the foxhole is at the state level. It's fought all over, but we have a lot of the discussions and a lot of the detailed policy work on the issue of life at the state level. And so during the time I've served in the legislature, I've been able to be a part of several efforts to improve the state of life in Oklahoma. So in the, let's see, we did in House in 2016, sorry, I got to get my years right. In 2016, I was able to author a bill that strengthened our laws against physician-assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. And this is a bill that the group Oklahomans for Life really got behind. And I was able to present it on the floor of the House and had a wonderful time explaining why it's needed, the principles that are behind it. And then ultimately that got passed overwhelmingly, went over to the Senate where a Senate author held it up. And that was a little bit of a frustrating experience, especially for this group that wanted it so much, Oklahomans for Life. But nonetheless, it is something that we'll continue to work on. It's it has to do with making disincentivizing the practice by making statistics well known regarding the practice of physician assisted suicide. So in 2015. There was a House bill, I believe it was 1552, which would have revoked the licenses of any doctor that performed an abortion. Mm-hmm. That also passed the House. That was authored, the primary author on that was Representative David Brumbaugh, who has passed away since.
Right.
I was a co-author on it, and that ended up being vetoed by the governor. This past year, in 2017, I was the co-author on House Resolution that called on the executive branch in Oklahoma to exercise its authority to put an end to abortion. This is the first time that I know of in a state document of any kind, if this is a House resolution, that called abortion murder. And so that was a really important thing for us to pass as a House. It did pass the House. We made sure that people understood why we were doing it, and it was a wonderful effort to be a part of. This past year, what was a bill that was ultimately taken on by the group Oklahomans for Life. This is a bill that I authored and was signed into law last Friday. This is the Adoption Protection Bill. And the reason that it's a pro-life bill and the reason the group Oklahomans for Life got behind this bill was because when there is more access to adoption, the thought is that there is less desire for an abortion. And so because we're already seeing commitments from groups because of the law's passage to expand their child placing and their adoption services in Oklahoma, we're hoping that this will begin to answer the practice of abortion in Oklahoma. And so that was taken on as a pro-life cause, and I was honored to I woke up last Wednesday morning in the midst of this was two Wednesday mornings ago.
Yes.
In the midst of all of the discussion on that issue, and I found out that Franklin Graham had tweeted about it, and I was a little bit starstruck, I guess is the way to say it, because that was a wonderful boost to the discussion here in Oklahoma.
Well, certainly just anybody outside the state picking up a bill that was still in the process of being working its way through, but somebody of that stature, yeah, that's got to be setting you back just a little bit.
Yes, it was. And then after it passed the House, he then tweeted about it again to encourage the governor to sign it. And, you know, she deserves credit for signing that. She signed it last Friday, May 11th, and we have some good things going into effect now in Oklahoma for that. But that actually serves as the next transition. The next thing I wanted to talk about is freedom, and in particular religious freedom, because right now we're seeing a very strongly renewed interest in the inalienable right to freedom, and in particular religious freedom, because it is coming into question again. There's a lot of people who don't understand it, who don't see the role that it has played in American history, and consequently we need to come up with some answers for some new discussions in society.
Yeah, and of course with the more public notice of groups like Americans Against Religion and that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. So,
of course. So back in 2016, I authored a bill. I considered it a religious freedom bill because it allowed churches to do what they've been doing for over 1,000 years, which is accommodate needy people overnight. And so this was a bill that was instigated by a group here in Washington County called Family Promise. And Family Promise is a group that serves families with who are in a temporary living situation and helping them get into a more permanent living situation. And it uses church buildings and churches in the area and volunteers at those churches to get these families the help they need. Mm-hmm. Well, we needed to run some legislation on that issue so that building inspectors and so that cities understood that this would be a legitimate temporary use for the church facilities. And so I considered that a very important bill. It did get signed into law. We actually expanded it in 2017. Representative Pat Onby came back and expanded it a little bit. And so we've seen that growth. And I think that's a religious freedom issue. The churches need to operate according to the mandates of their teaching. And that is certainly right in line with the scriptural mandates that churches have. So in 2017, I authored a bill, Senate Bill 197, which would have provided wide-ranging protection for people of religious conviction to operate their businesses according to their conscience. I was honored to be part of that effort. However, that effort was opposed by some powerful groups and consequently didn't even get a hearing in the Senate. It did pass the Senate committee, but did not get a hearing on the floor. That bill resurfaced this year in an unusual way, and I was again proud to be part of that effort, but it ended up not being not taking another step in the process. In 2017, I also authored a bill that would have allowed Bible colleges in Oklahoma to give bachelor's degrees. Mm-hmm. We're in a minority of states that doesn't allow Bible colleges to give degrees. This is something that Rhema Bible College really wants. There's several Bible colleges in Oklahoma City that produce outstanding graduates. If you speak with them and you speak with their professors, you'll be very impressed. But they're not allowed to give degrees. The ironic thing about that, Charlie, the church invented the degree in the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you look at the number of churches that are among our highest prestige Ivy League schools, Harvard University, started by the Congregational Church, several others, I don't remember which ones, so I'm just going to say many of the major universities, non-state universities, were started by churches.
Absolutely. And so I
started at Eureka College, Ronald Reagan's alma mater, at the time very fully supported by the Christian Church. So,
Yep, of course. So that is... So I was glad to be part of that effort. What happened is the State Board of Regents came out against that bill. And I was not expecting them to come out against it because it's very obvious to me that Bible colleges deserve to give bachelor's degrees. Consequently, they caught me a little bit by surprise and thwarted my committee presentation. Consequently, it did not get a successful vote in committee. But we can see if we can move that issue forward in the future. All right, so again on the topic of religious freedom, this year I successfully added an amendment, got passed into law, to help protect the Hope Clinic here in Bartlesville. The Hope Clinic was going to be a part of an update of the Dental Registration Act that required fines be paid for operating the mobile dental clinic. Well, the Hope Clinic out here offers the mobile dental services, I think a couple times a month, I don't remember exactly, but they operate a mobile dental unit. Mm-hmm. They don't charge at all. It's completely free. And yet the state was going to come in and charge them a fine for offering free services to people in District 10 in this area. And so I saw that. I right away got an amendment prepared to be attached to that to make sure that they were protected. We got it on there. We got a lot of support from my colleagues for doing it, and consequently got to see that go into law, which was a really good victory this year. And then again this year, religious freedom is the Adoption Protection Bill is not only a life issue, but it's a religious freedom issue. Mm-hmm. Because it's allowing people to protect their conscience as they're operating their child placing agency. They don't have to violate their conscience if they want to help the state with children in state custody. So, well, I don't know how. I think we're doing okay on time, right?
Let's take a break, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment with State Representative Travis Dunlap.
If you're suffering from a bad back, bad knees, need a hip replacement, call the Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center, 918-494-9300. With a large number of only the best qualified specialists on staff, EOC is able to provide better care than anyone else in Eastern Oklahoma. I should know. I had my back surgery in 2012 with a degenerative disc between L4 and L5. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center took me through a step-by-step process, and which now, after surgery, I am leading a normal life. Get back to your normal life. Whether you're in need of back surgery, hip replacement, knee surgery, or knee replacement, trust your happiness to Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. Ask your doctor about EOC or call for a consultation. 918-494-9300. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. We're located in the Natalie Building at 6475 South Yale in Tulsa.
Continuing our time this morning, talking with Travis Dunlap, and so far, primarily we've been talking about your record. Incumbent politicians, whoever he or she may be, have a record, and hopefully it's a record they're proud of. And obviously, you feel that you've done some good things.
Well, I do, Charlie, and forgive me because I've been kind of taking over the conversation.
That's okay.
There's so much to cover in a short period of time, but it is a record I'm proud of, and again, it's just these principles mean something to me, mm-hmm. and these principles have meant something to my family since we've been in Bartlesville since the 1930s.
Well, looking at your campaign materials, I mean, the word principled is very prominent, very up front and center.
You know? Thank you. Well, let's go on and talk about, I think there's work to be done in the area of family policy here in the state.
Okay.
And the two things I want to bring out in this are the reform in the divorce process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something I've worked on a lot in the last couple of years. Ultimately, I haven't been successful, but I've started on some things that I think can continue in the future. And this begins to address the case of frivolous divorce in Oklahoma. Unilateral no-fault divorce has created a culture that plagues our society, and a distasteful divorce industry has made our area one of the divorce capitals in America. If you look at nationwide statistics, we're up really high, particularly Tulsa area, in divorce. And so I want to reform the process. It's obviously a touchy subject, but I think it can be done with wisdom. Our statutes have not been updated in a really long time. And so if nothing else, we need to update the statutes. I also support the idea of something called covenant marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And what this would do is this would create a state-recognized marriage for people who want to view it as a divine institution. It would actually take away the ability to easily get divorced, and it will put in more requirements for counseling and more requirements to get a license in the first place.
Governor Henry took a few steps towards that process a few years ago, but that's probably the last time that I remember a conversation about it.
Yeah, well, he put into place the divorce education class, and that's something that I support, and that's kind of the model that I've been using to build up a coalition to move the needle on that issue as well. So. Well, let me go in a different direction now. I want to talk about economic incentives.
Okay.
Opportunity is a really important thing about the principles. We have the pursuit of happiness as one of our inalienable rights.
Economic development overall, a very prominent issue the other night on a Lieutenant Governor forum. So
yes, it was, and you did a great job on that. Thank you, Charlie. I would say that the government incentivizes businesses by supporting primarily infrastructure in the state and creating a tax environment that is attractive. I support the Quality Jobs Act. Hopefully listeners are somewhat familiar with that. I also support the incentives for aerospace and automotive engineers. And the thing I want to emphasize about these are the government obviously can't step into the economy in every way. But these are win-win situations because it's only dealing with new job growth. And it also, because it's only dealing with new job growth, it curbs the government growth that may go along with those things. And so it's a conservative program, but it's also an incentivizing program. It's a win-win. And so those are the sorts of economic incentives that I support. I want to talk about the tax policy and state budget just as a principle. I do not support tax increases without tax reform. I think we can create reform in our tax code and consequently create more revenue growth at the state level just because we're aligning tax policy with pro-growth policies.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer, on this line, I prefer consumption taxes to income taxes, and I think production taxes ultimately get paid by the consumer, and so I'm not so interested in doing a lot with production taxes. So that those are just principles that I take to any of my discussions on tax policies. The recent increase, House Bill 1011XX, mm-hmm. the more discussed one is 1010XS, but we passed 1011XX, which would put a cap on the amount of itemized deductions. I strongly opposed that, not because I'm necessarily against doing away with deductions, but I want to see the reform take place so that it's a wash. So if you lower the rate and then cap the deductions, I'm fine with that. I think that's actually, I would just call that tax simplification.
Mm-hmm.
But to do what we did, which we created a net increase in what Oklahomans are having to pay off their income, I did not support that.
Well, I think when you talk about deductions, there was a conversation at the federal level because we've increased the standard deduction, which simplified the tax code greatly. But it'll take a year or two or three to see how that affects people's giving to their church, the local nonprofit, the Red Cross, whatever it might be, because they don't get that incentive of the deduction. So I can see how that works.
Well, and we thankfully have some very good watchdogs in Oklahoma that help remind us of the importance of those special charitable giving donations. Mm-hmm. So that has been taken out of any sort of proposals. That was not changed. So your charitable donations in Oklahoma are still tax deductible. So. Okay, well, I'll move on. Move on to education policy.
Great.
The thing I want to emphasize about education policy is that I support local control. I believe that local school boards should decide graduation requirements, curriculum, salary schedules, security policies, and much more. And the thing that I like to point out to people in this regard, I represent 9 different school districts that have their location in House District 10. But of the people of the school districts that have a footprint in District 10, not that their building is there, but they should have part of their boundaries in mm-hmm. my district, I have 19 school districts. And so because of that, I have over 100 school board members that deal with students that are in House District 10.
Mm-hmm.
These 100 people, over 100 people, are elected. And so why are we not trusting our elected officials on the issue of education? Why are people coming to the state level and asking us to set curriculum, asking us to set security policies? Well, the 9 different districts in my area are incredibly different from one another. There's no reason, and it would be very difficult to write a policy that would be beneficial for all of them at that time. And so these are things that inform any decision I'm making on education policy. And in fact, you might see me not supporting an effort that you would agree with or that isn't generally a good policy, but is something I just think the local school boards need to make. And so if you it's just amazing what we get asked to deal with, and I'm thinking this shouldn't be dealt with on the state level. But that's what I support, and that's kind of the thing I want to emphasize. I do support broad-based, family-driven, responsible school choice opportunities for Oklahoma. I would say that's all about releasing the ingenuity of our population. In order to do that, we would need expanded education options.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nothing against the traditional options that we have here in District 10. I'm just wanting to recognize that we have a free market that is interacting with a world free market that is expanding and it's growing at rates that would be much better complemented with there were more education options.
Well, just because I'm looking at the clock, you are obviously out there, web presence, Facebook presence, and I want to make sure that people, number one, have the opportunity to connect with you that way, and also to remind people that you will be among a group of people presenting their views next week at an education forum.
Okay, well, can I cover 2 more things? Do I have enough time to do that?
Yeah.
I'll cover 2 more things just because they're in the news. They're in the news because Governor Fallon vetoed what is called the constitutional carry.
Right.
So a lot of your listeners may be following this issue very closely. There is an effort to gather signatures from legislators to call us in and to override the veto.
Mm-hmm.
I'll support that effort.
I saw your Facebook post on that.
Okay, well, what I need to say is that a lot of people worry about the training aspect. And quite honestly, I do too. I think it is important to be trained if you're going to be caring in our culture, in our cities, and things like that. But the issue comes down with me is the founders clearly intended that those sorts of managing that sort of mandate would not come from the governmental level. And so that's why, even though I 100% agree training is going to be a good thing, it's just not the government's role to do that. Okay. And so I do support constitutional carry, and I want to make sure that that's a part of the discussion.
Not trying to put words in the candidate's mouth, but I think it sounds to me like you're going back to the original words, shall not be infringed.
Shall not be infringed, that's right. And then the only last thing I'll talk about, I'll talk about the criminal justice reform. It's on a lot of people's minds. Mm-hmm. I just want to leave several general impressions. The first impression is I generally support the efforts. There's always changes that can be made in the criminal code. But I am not, I do not appreciate the characterization that many people make, that our prisons are filled with people who really shouldn't be there, or they're completely populated by nonviolent people. I don't think that's the case. We don't need to just be frivolously letting people out because they're not violent. There were good reasons that they were put in there. And so I'm walking a fine line between I want to support criminal justice reform, and I think that's important, but the much better reform for the criminal justice area is to start addressing the mental health and drug addiction issues that plague our society in that way. So if you want to see a much better bang for your buck, and you want to see conservative principles enacted in that way, we're going to save you the taxpayer money when we prioritize mental health and drug treatment rather than broad-based let everybody out of prison sort of reform.
Travis Dunlap with us this morning. Travis, how does somebody get a hold of you if they have a question
Thank
that
you.
We have not covered?
Well, my email address, traviskdunlap@gmail.com. I have travisdunlap.com as my website, and you'll start seeing some of these things being put up there soon. Charlie, I want to thank you for the time, and I've just so much enjoyed being able to sit down and talk about some of these principles.
It's important for the voters, and of course, the election coming up on June 26th. The Overcomers on the way next, and Voice of the Martyrs brought to you by Brian Little, Haley and Kent, CPA.
Hi, I'm Todd Nettleton, and this is the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Last December, five Laotian believers